Welcome to LOI Weekly Season 3, Episode 28. I'm going to warn you, this is a fairly packed show, an awful lot going on, but we've a hell of a lot to talk about. Not only the FAI Cup coming up, but the amount of news that's happened over the last week or so, some of it actually broken by the man sitting opposite me, Daniel MacDonald. We are LOI Weekly with Podcast Republic, Spotify, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Apple Podcasts. We're at LOI Weekly on Twitter in association with Airsport and Independent.ie. And it was on the Irish Independent that Dan broke one of the more left-field transfer stories in recent times. Dan Carr to going to Limassol. Wouldn't have seen that coming. Possibly wouldn't have seen what happened afterwards either, Dan. No. What's the other Dan? Actually tried to get another Dan, Dan Kelly on the show this morning, but that fell through. Another man in an unbelievable form at the moment. The Dan Carr thing. Where do you start?
I don't know. I mean, it's obviously all exploded since then. I mean, you know, obviously heard last week that it was very likely to happen. I've actually been off the last couple of days, so I haven't.
Do you know the way you get a story though? You're like, hang on now. You know, like
there is a bit of that, yeah. Like there is always a small danger of this. I really hope this isn't wrong because it's sort of. But then at the same time, like, why would you make that up? You know what I mean? Like if you hear something on the grapevine, it is one of those ones where you're thinking, God, I really hope this one comes off, or else. Because of course, like transfer stories, like if like loads of transfers are floated, and sometimes you hear after, God, he nearly joined that club. Like they don't always go through. Like when you're covering a transfer story, you're not like saying this will definitely happen. You're saying it looks like this will happen, as you know yourself.
Yeah,
like,
I did a story in Furlong this season.
It's a perilous thing. Like someone will tell you, but you have to be really, really sort of confident about it. And like it's possible that it falls through, and then people would say, well. It's a lot of rubbish. I remember years ago, wasn't there a lot of chat about Ronaldo going from Manchester United to Real Madrid, obviously at the very, very highest level, and it didn't happen. And a load of people obviously had that story, got stick over at the time. And then it turned out a deal had been done that he would go a year later, you know. And this, like, so there's always maneuvering and stuff going on back behind the scenes.
That small fry like, to Dan Carr.
Well, the Dan Carr going to Limassol thing, although,
This story, though, took on a totally different level because of Stephen Bradley's reaction to it. Interestingly, I think Stephen Bradley's changed a lot in terms of he doesn't say as much in the media and he's been a lot more nuanced. But before Waterford's game against Rovers, he was speaking to Shane Dawson on Air Sports on Monday night. And here's what he had to say about the whole Dan Carr situation.
A big squad effort needed, of course. How big a loss will Dan Carr be to your plans?
Look, we obviously could have kept Dan. Dan had a year and a half left in his deal. We just felt that he wasn't really fit for us going forward, so it was time to move. But we're fine. We made the decision fully aware of where we were. Like I said, we could have kept him, but it was our decision to move him.
I think, Dan, this story isn't really, like, it's a big story, but it's kind of left. And Rory Hewson put up on Twitter last night that it was the two big stories in soccer on RTE were Dan Carr and Bradley and Dan Carr. I was like, what's the need to get involved in this? And obviously Bradley was very pissed off about something.
See, I don't know, yeah, because, like, I think, you know, people will speak. Dan Carr, I think, is going to have a say in... Even in like in covering transfer stories and information like you know around this, like everyone's minding their own. Everyone will always put out the side of the story that suits them.
Yours, mine, and the truth.
And of course, like I can understand why that happens because like there's definitely conflicting bits of info going around. I mean, like as far as I know, anyway, like Dan Carr's deal in Cyprus would make him. He would be comfortably the highest paid player in the League of Ireland if he got that same deal here now.
Comfortably,
yeah. So I believe he's got a very good deal there.
When you think so, Graham Burke, Andy Boyle, and some of the players have come back,
I would think you know you could be talking something like nice climate and a percentage up from that. So that's well, Graham Burke actually he's on a loan deal, so I wouldn't count him because obviously. You know, whatever the arrangement would be. But yeah, guys that are here permanently.
So why did Bradley get involved?
Well, I would suspect now that, look, when I did the story initially last Thursday, there seemed to be a suggestion that Dan Carr would still be travelling to Derry the following day for the game. And I think, you know, when the move became possible, I think there might have been a suggestion that maybe Dan Carr wasn't mad on going to Derry then. Obviously, on Friday then we heard that he was, I mean, Stephen Brady said he was overdoing the medical, so maybe that's only a minor issue, but I would suspect, you know, when Dan Carr became aware of the deal that was available to him, he was probably pretty keen to go, and I think a lot of players in the league would have done the same, to be honest. Maybe Wood Rovers have preferred the deal to proceed more on their own terms in terms of the speed of it. I don't know. Like, that's, I'm speculating a bit there. I'm not going to say with certainty. So I'd imagine that the chronology of it and around the Derry game might explain some of whatever tension that seems to exist. It seems to be a bizarre story, but ultimately, like, Dan Carr, if all the Rovers players are available, I don't think he's a first choice player for Rovers, particularly when Faroujia comes back. There was talk of Dan Carr going to Pats recently. Rovers said he's 18 months left in his contract, or a year and a bit left in his contract. I actually was under the impression his contract was up at the end of the year. Now, I'm not sure if that means that there was an option there rather than a specific contract length. I'm not so sure about that. But either way, I would have thought it was a pretty good deal for Rovers, for someone who was probably surplus to requirements a month ago, and a pretty good deal for Carr in the sense that he's got a massive pay rise. So it should be a happy for all camps. But clearly there's some, you know, there must be some issue about how the deal was communicated that's caused a problem.
Rovers have lost three players, arguably, in the last few months that, in my view, none of them will be starting at the moment. And they've lost them to big clubs. They've lost Aaron Bulger, who wouldn't have been starting. Trevor Clark probably wouldn't be starting. I think Kavanagh would be starting ahead of him now.
Yeah, you can argue the toss on that one.
So it's very weird that you've League of Ireland clubs losing players to pretty big clubs that actually aren't even regular starters. Well, you have three of them.
It's League of Ireland. I mean, it is Rovers. You know, I mean, like, Dundalk was the same with Dylan Connolly last year. You know, like, they're the only two clubs that can probably do that, to be fair. And
you had Stephen Rice on last week, ex Rovers. Now, there was an interesting chat about Europe and all of that. I kind of missed it. I was in the beach, but there was a bit of reaction to it.
We had a general chat last week about the this European debate and fallout, and it's continued over the last week, the post-mortem.
Into RTE last night with Gary Rogers on
David Sweeney had a very strong piece on Sunday, which I wouldn't really agree with some of it, but this is what happens at the end of the European year, that there's always a stage of the nation debate about the League of Ireland, and that's why, like, in terms of perception of the league, the results in Europe are important, because it always stimulates this debate every year, whether it's fair or not. Now, I think, like, in recent weeks, we've spoken a bit here about how I would be of the opinion that, say, the games that Dundalk and Rovers play here probably don't prepare them for Europe. But I guess maybe last week in the discussion, it maybe came across a small bit like that's the fault of the other clubs that are, you know, that they need to up their game.
That have been surviving on no prize money and no TV money.
Whereas it's practically impossible for them to do that now. And, you know, the point was made, and I think it's, like, the one thing I would say about, and people would accuse us of bias and stuff, like, the Dundalk story did start from nothing. That is a fact. Like, they didn't buy their way.
That's the outlier.
They didn't start off with, like, the American firm owning them and bringing them to the top a la, you know, a Chelsea or a Man City type thing. That's a product of their success. They did start with nothing, and it was the genius of Stephen Kenny to pull it together. However, he pulled it together in 2013 when the league, in my opinion, was at a crossroads in terms of where we were at in terms of standard at the top end. I mean, Sligo won the league. Sligo Rovers in 2012 won the league. A part-time Drogheda team was essentially second.
You're coming out of a recession.
Very part-time Drogheda team was second. So Dundalk started from scratch, were able to put together a team that could challenge for a league title straight away. Cork with Caulfield pretty much did the same a year later. It's impossible for the teams below to do that now. It's just, you can't say that, you know, a manager can somehow pull it together.
Well, you need somebody putting in a colossal amount of money.
And then you're in danger of overstretching, and you're talking about creating like a false economy for players, which benefits players but doesn't benefit anyone else. And this is a problem that we're in now. It is true to say that the Dundalk and Rovers probably, it doesn't help their performances in Europe, that they're probably not getting like the high enough standard of games. But it's also like that's not the fault of the other clubs. It's also true that they can't get near Dundalk and Rovers because of the money they get from Europe. So we're in this weird sort of...
Well, we need some prize money in the league.
Weird
we need funding in the league.
Like Dundalk Rovers now, I think, like, you know, the one team that probably can probably still get there in a strange way is Cork, because they still have a massive catchment area. You know, if they get an appointment right, they could start next season with massive crowds and a buzz, and they can still attract players to the region. So they're probably the one that can come up. But for any of the, for even for a Bowes or a Derry even, like, to try and get to that level, they probably have to push themselves in a way that they don't want to push themselves. And that's a risky business, because the top two even have a job to do to balance the books to a degree with what they're doing. Yeah. So, like, you know, next year, I think, you know, we have to look at everything. Like, I can completely understand the resentment of the smaller clubs with games being called off around Europe, you know, around European fixtures. I think next year that needs to be looked at seriously. I think there's an argument still that for every club's first round of fixtures, their first game, you know, you can try and arrange it so they have a free week between their first leg tie. But after that, there probably shouldn't be any provisions.
No funding in the league. There is no funding, and there's no TV money. So Sligo Rovers can get by year to year by having a fundraiser and cobbling money together and bringing out their own beer with €1 a pint. This isn't sustainable, and we all know this.
No. And the thing is, like,
we need
Yeah, we need the league to improve collectively, but it's very hard for them to do that.
Like, and there is an element of watching Rovers on Monday night and thinking, watching Bowes and UCD, even to lesser extent, but watching Dundalk absolutely batter Bowes, you're like,
Bowes, we'll come on to UCD in a minute. I mean, Bowes, like Bowes winning 10-1 last Friday, to me, wasn't a good story at all.
It was laughable. It was shameful.
It was an embarrassment. And
then, like, they ship five in Dundalk.
And it comes back to the basic point. But, like, again, all right, so you would look at last Friday very crudely, and you would say, and we've made the point before, and John Coffey made the point before, and PFEI would make the point before, and everyone, again, has their own stake in the game here. Like, we need to have minimum standards of some kind in the Premier Division. So, like, if you have a team in the Premier Division that runs a slightly unique system, you know, in terms of, like, the scholarships and, you know, effectively a form of an amateur contract as such. Like, that, it's the highest level of football in the country, and you're thinking, should we have some kind of standard that you can't compete at the highest level? However, if I'm listening to this from you, I'd be going, well, hang on a minute. You know, we haven't caused problems over the years in terms of how many headlines have we generated in terms of, like, defaulting on this or that, or, you know, all the sort of scandalous stories that we've had, or clubs, you know, reforming under new training companies and going bust and coming back and coming back and coming back. They haven't brought any of that shame.
No, so
if you're talking about merit, well, what is the definition of merit? Is, like, they're there in merit. What about a club that, like, went bust and came back under a new entity? Are they there in merit?
Yeah, but UCD, like, play in a ground that is completely unfit for purpose. They don't really promote the club at all in the college. UCD are great for the league if they're in the first division, I think. But what happened on Friday, as you say, you're on about preparing teams for Europe. If Bowes can beat UCD 10-1, how do we come to a situation where this can't happen again, where UCD are a joke shop?
It's very hard to, like, it's actually really hard to do that. Like, it's actually very hard to do that because we don't have a uniformity of opinion across the league that, like, you can do that. You can take one approach and it's going to cause mayhem. Like, I know the PFEI approach, and they wouldn't be massively popular with clubs that have struggled over the years, but their approach would be you should have a minimum amount of professionals in the top division. That is one way of looking at it. But obviously, you know, you need clubs to be able to afford that and to be able to maintain that. So, like, we are stuck in a bind here. Like, the reason that it's becoming more of a talking point about the clubs at the top and how they're being held back as such is because we haven't had the financial collapse of a champion or a top team that we had regularly a decade ago. Like, we recycled our champions all the time because clubs just kept going from A to B and then they come back to the start. Like, you know, you can have debates about the direction of the clubs, but I don't think they're coming back in the short term. So we're going to have this. And as I said, the European results to me are still important because the debate, the wider Irish public will still look at European results and make judgments based on the European results. Now, maybe that's not always fair, and maybe, like, it's way too small a sample size to make a dramatic conclusion, but people do it. Like, the European results, I know it in my job. Like, it's the European results is when other people just start to look in, and it is important that our teams do well. So when we're talking about our team has been prepared to the highest possible standard, that's the angle. But it's not to be ignorant of the fact that the other clubs below, they just can't get to that level to produce that level of competition on a regular basis too. So, like, we are stuck in a pretty
well, we need
testing cycle.
We do. We need something like Kieran Lewis's proposal, where there's a lot of money in the league, so that teams can kind of sustain themselves without a model that clearly doesn't work, because it's not possible for clubs to pay wages with the money that's coming in, which is effectively just gate receipts and a bit of sponsorship. But we do need to wrap up on this.
Collie.
So Bowes 10, UCD 1 was the result that we'll get back to in a moment. Waterford 1, Cork City 2. Pats had a big win over Sligo, which pushed them back very much into the race for the top four, if not top three. Derry City 0, Shamrock Rovers 2, a blow for Derry's own top four ambitions. Dundalk 5, Finn Harps 0. Harps on great form going into the game, but a bit of a blip there. And then the game we mentioned, Waterford 1, Shamrock Rovers 5. That was on Monday night on Air Sport, and also Dundalk qualifying for the final of the EA Sports Cup. So, yeah, that game on Friday, Dan, I was at the UCD Bowes game. Andrew Wright got 4 goals. Young Tierney got his first goal for Bowes. Positives for Bowes. Could really work for them going forward with Andrew Wright off the mark. Absolutely embarrassing if you're watching it from a general League of Ireland stance, that a team could leak 10 goals. And then Colly O'Neill. I don't think Colly O'Neill sacking is to do with results. There's definitely something more going on, in my view. But it's a strange one. UCD, you don't associate UCD with getting rid of their manager, especially at this stage of the season. And obviously the full story will come out, but it's an odd one. Took people by surprise.
Yeah, I mean, listen, there's always, as I said, look, you know, there's always internal stuff going on, so we can talk about it to a degree, but what we can deal with is a sort of a pretty basic bottom line fact, is that UCD had Colly O'Neill as their manager and now they don't. And for a club that...
We did try to get Colly on the show as well, but he was very busy with work this morning.
For a club that looks to be going down, to be honest, barring a sort of dramatic revival, so if they go down, like, well, what do they need to do? They probably need someone to do the job that Colly did, you know? Like, that's what they need to regroup. So they've let the best person go for the job that's coming next. And as I said, we've touched on it before, where UCD stands in a Premier Division context is difficult, because if they get a very good group of players together like they did, they will lose them, and then they end up in this cycle, etc. again. So it's like snakes and ladders, and there's no... maybe there's no happy conclusion, and maybe Colly could have got frustrated anyway, you know, over a period of time.
I've often argued about UCD. We should have first division strong enough that UCD don't get promoted, basically. That there are better teams in the first division than UCD with the structure they have, and that's not always
well,
the case.
It exposes, well, that exposes, or highlights, sorry, what a great job Colly did last year. That, like, there was other teams in the first division who recruited extensively enough last year.
They'd have good players now.
You know, yeah, no, I know.
Look at the players they
have. I know, they had good players, but they, like, how many of them were established good players at the start of it? Like, a lot of teams had good players in the first division who, like, didn't function in whatever way, for whatever reason. Yeah, like, obviously, at a first division level, you know, you have the scholarship players together. They're almost full-time in the sense that they're on campus all the time, etc. But, like, they still were all under 23. Okay, I know, like, Gary O'Neill had been away, like, Ferrugia is probably one of the most exciting players in the country, you know, even the likes of Sloggett, look at what he's done, etc. Right? That's fair enough. But they still were all relatively unknown quantities to a degree, you know? And like he managed to sort of put that group together with no real support behind them at their games and make them the best team in the division. I think I probably agree. It shouldn't be the case that a team of kids should be the best team in that division. But the fact that it is tells you a lot about that division, and it can be a bit of a rogues gallery, to a degree at first
like
division level.
LOI Weekly. But the results from the first division last week: Limerick 1, Athlone Town 1, Drogheda 6, Wexford 0. Another result that, anyway.
Wexford have players coming and going as well, though. I think
it's very hard. Limerick's attendance at that game was announced on Twitter as today's attendance. I think it was like 223 or something like that. But it was like today's official attendance is 223, followed by a series of dots, which I thought was quite a loaded. And then to which a Wexford fan replies, "We die for a crowd like that at our games." Fortunately, that's where you're at.
What was the Limerick game? Sorry, that was Limerick.
They drew 1-1 against Athlone. Mm. Now, again, Limerick have had a shambles of a season off the pitch, so their season is derailed. So these games don't really matter. And that's the problem in the first division, despite the fact that they've restructured it very well. Obviously, Drogheda 6, Wexford 0. Brian Cove shared 6 goals equally at the Belinda Carlisle grounds. Cavan Teely 0. Galway United 1. Two victories on the road for Galway United. And
the revolution.
Longford nil, Shelburne 2.
It will not be televised.
Massive win for massive win for the Reds. But Galway United did get that big win in Cabinteely. And earlier on, Dan, very much you're held up by you have a bit of a cold or some affliction.
Under the weather the last few days. I never get sick at all. Like, we did off the ball on Saturday. And I'm at home after. Like, you were on the go for a point after. And I was like, Mike. And then it
just took hold.
Ended up not going. I'm at home.
Bad traffic. Then, poor tunnel closed off.
That was this morning. But I was wiped out the last couple of days.
So you weren't here just for the Alan Murphy chat, which we did earlier, myself and Alan. Some very interesting points here, I think, from Alan. And obviously Galway United playing Cork City on Friday night in the Extra.EFEI Cup. Alan, how are you keeping?
Very good, Johnny. How are you?
Not so bad. Very much looking forward to Friday. Obviously, there haven't been that many big games for Galway United over the last couple of years, really. But is there a bit of a buzz around the place?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. There's a great buzz. It's been a difficult season at times. And the last 2 weeks, I suppose, has been a little bit of an up curve in terms of results. But still, I mean, very kind of similar in terms of performances for a lot of the season. Maybe a mistake here or there has put us to the sword a lot of weeks, but it's going to be an interesting one on Friday, and we're really looking forward to it. And there is a good buzz, yeah. I'm hoping that obviously the weather is a little bit iffy at the moment, but I mean, I'm hoping that people will come out, yeah.
How have you found your first season? Because you'd made a fine impression, obviously, at the under 17s, but this was a different ball game.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's learning. It's always learning, but I think it's going to be always learning for any coach or any manager at any age or level. So, I'm pretty comfortable, to be honest with you, at the moment. I've learned a lot as a player, and I've learned a lot, I suppose, in terms of I've been viewing and looking at managers now for a long time in terms of the good and the bad, and probably maybe even wrongly so, analysing them before my time, maybe while I was a player, analysing the manager and seeing was he good and bad at. But I mean, I'd hope that I've taken a lot of learning from that, and that I think that I've brought forward, I suppose, a little bit of characteristics of a lot of people, and then my own. I mean, I'm on my own unique ones, but. And it's been, look, I suppose the group has been the big one. I mean, I'm working with a group that are really, really dedicated, and they're young and they're inexperienced, but they're really positive, and there's no negativity in the group. And I mean, that's a huge part of management and coaching in terms of trying to get a group that you can work with. And I mean, I don't think that has been in Galway for the last few years.
Yeah, you made that point many times at the start of the season that you felt there were probably players there that were just there to collect a wage, and that it needed a bit of a radical overhaul, which you obviously looked to realise, and you have realised really with all the young players coming through and basically nearly all the players being from Galway.
Yeah, it's been one that has, to be honest with you, I mean, it's not only in the last few years, it has gone on for a long time, and it goes on in every club. But I suppose really it is down to it's down to manager and recruitment and I mean if you recruit bad eggs, like, you know what you're going to get, like. I mean, so I suppose if someone coming in to collect a wage, I don't really have a huge problem with that, but I have a problem with them if they don't apply themselves and are good pros and are basically only collecting the wage. I mean, everybody has to work, so therefore, like, if someone comes in and does a good job and gets paid for it, I mean, that's ideal. Like, I mean, but it's not ideal that someone doesn't care and doesn't really have an affiliation with the place and may not even after training doesn't even hang around, really. It's a collection point, like, so that's not good, and that has been too. There's been too many of those guys in the last while, like.
Yeah, I thought at start season with the performance against Shells that we might kind of exceed expectations, but results kind of tailed off a bit then throughout the middle. An awful lot of games that Galway lost by just a goal as well, which must have been very frustrating.
Yeah, look, I mean, and I totally understand. I don't mean to be disrespectful to you, but the only educated eye in terms of what's going on outside the club or inside the club. I mean, a lot of people would have thought that our budget was probably a lot more than it was for large portions of the season. I even recall you at one stage yourself when we went down to Cove and lost to Cove, said that we lost against an amateur side. But I mean, when you look at it, I mean, Cove's budget is probably twice what ours is. So I mean, it's and we've only two pros. I mean, okay, and again, it's just in general. I mean, it was there was probably the information wasn't out there for the public in terms of what we were doing, and I suppose some thought we should be getting results against clubs that were, I mean, there were budgets probably 10 times our budget. Like, you know, I mean, that's, but even though I suppose the issue was that we've actually performed pretty well against them. If we capitulated and lost by four or five each game, I mean, people would probably have realized very quickly. But I mean, I think we performed very well, and he started even at first game of the season against Shells, where we probably should have beaten them. And the budget was what the budget was, and therefore we didn't probably have the experience that we needed in terms of to turn those 1-0 deficits to draws or wins, because we continuously week in, week out, we were beaten by, a lot of the time we were beaten by the player, the experienced player in the middle of the park from each team, the Paul Keegans and the Alan Burns of last year, and these types of players that, I mean, are able to dictate a game and that have nous that our, the young lads didn't have.
I'm obviously speculating with regard to budgets and all that. In terms of budget for next season, there's obviously good talk in Galway about the involvement of the Comer brothers, and I suppose specifically as well that they would be putting money into this facility in Athenry, which was actually originally earmarked for the hurlers, whose manager Micheál Dunne just stepped down last night. I suppose the big news in Galway, but that must be massive, Alan, in terms of the future, regardless of who's playing for the club, you know, just to have that bedrock there that has been missing for so long.
Yeah, totally. I mean, it's a step in the right direction, and we're really pleased and really thankful to the Comers that they're now coming on board again, and they're going to press the thing on and push it on to another level. Hopefully, we need our own facility, we need our own training grounds. We rent training grounds at the moment. Our first team training, Salt and Devon, who are brilliant to us, I have a brilliant relationship with, and I mean they've been very good, Again, the nature of a development club and a really progressive club like Salt Hill is that they're going to be doing well, and they're going to have more teams, and they're going to need more of their facilities, and the time slots get tighter, and so we do need our own, and we need a plan. I mean, we need a plan for our own. So that's really refreshing, and it's something to look forward to. Also, in terms of the back end for the team and for the whole, I suppose for what's happening. I mean that. I mean, we look at it this year, what we've done. We've really developed our young players. I mean, you look at where we were last year and where we are now. I mean, the amount of our own underage talent and the talent that I've identified from the region as well. I mean, that have now played for Galway United and have now have 17, 18, 19 games of real experience. Whether it was a 1-0 defeat or in the last 2 weeks it was two good wins. I mean, it's the result is a little bit immaterial in terms of that experience. I mean, obviously we look at performances first of all, and we do want to have results. But I mean, was it all about results this year? It wasn't, because I mean, whether we finished one more place above somebody else or somebody else, whatever it might. I mean, if we take that mentality, then we were going looking at like every game was going to have to be a cup game in terms of us trying to win it. And I mean, I think you've probably seen in the last few months that a lot of players have got a chance, and we've experimented with different styles of play and to try and educate the players we have coming in, like, you know.
Yeah, and Conor Barry's return to form has been huge. Obviously, you missed him for much of the season as well, because he hasn't been quite fit in terms of injury.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's not. I mean, you look at Conor Barry was injured, Éireann Davern. I mean, we've missed key players, and we don't have, and I don't mean to be disrespectful to the group, but we don't have many key players in terms of that experience that other players, that other teams have. So, I mean, CB is coming back to form at a good time. It's a slow one, because he's had injuries and that. And I mean, difficult season for him in terms of, I suppose, confidence, like every player that was flying last year. And now he found himself in this kind of the project this year that he was needed to be a leader a little bit earlier than he probably should be in terms of his age and his development. But But and probably needed a few more experienced players around him to push on this year. But he's been a great guy. I mean, he's bounced back, and I suppose it's a good showing for his character that he's able to bounce back, and that he's got us across the line the last few games.
And how realistic is the prospect of beating Cork on Friday?
I think, you know me, Johnny. I mean, we'll be very positive. I mean, obviously they're a premier to side. They would have started the season, again, no disrespect to where they are, but they'd have started the season to probably looking at winning the league, like winning the Premier Division. So, I mean, that's where their budgets were, that's where their players were. So, look, they've probably said the results haven't been great no more than ourselves. So, I mean, it'll be a tough one for both, and they have to come up to Galway, and we're on the back of two wins. So, I mean, anything can happen in the cup. Look, and I understand that everyone looking in expects a Cork win, no more than a Collinstown win last weekend, Johnny.
that was odds related. I mean, no,
you wouldn't know. The guys that are doing the stats and all that, they might get it wrong 2 weeks in a row. You wouldn't know.
And just finally, as well, what's your relationship been like with the board? Because obviously, I've known a few of those guys involved, and it's been in its infancy as a fan run kind of entity. And I suppose are you all set for the future as well in terms of the back of next season, and hopefully the expectation, I suppose, that we'll climb up the table a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've a really healthy relationship with the board. I mean, they're I keep in contact with them a lot of the time. Last week we've sat down together, and I've made a presentation for an hour to the guys about what I think should happen going forward, and where the club is at now in terms of the development and the work that has been done this season. The outside person wouldn't probably realise any of the work or any of the actual advantages or real inroads that we've made this year. Like, so I mean, that needs to be worked on again, and needs to be pushed on to hopefully another level. And I mean, look, another level is always going to cost things. It's always going to need more work. I mean, that's kind of where we're at the moment in terms of identifying. And I mean, it's refreshing, though. I mean, that's what I'm trying to bring into Galway United is I mean, this was never a case in previous years where we'll say 4 or 5 or 6 weeks before the end of a season that we'd actually be planning for next season, which sounds pretty ridiculous that it wouldn't have ever happened before. But I mean, that was the case. Like, there was every player was out of contract. Every player was up for grabs. You know, it was like a total new kind of we'll start in January type of thing and start signing players. And I mean, sure, the model just didn't work. Like, you know.
Yeah. How many players finally have you signed up for next season?
That's a good question. Well, obviously the young fellas. So, I mean, there'll be 7 or 8 hopefully by the end of this week. Just obviously we needed to wait for leaving cert results and that types of stuff. Cause we've a lot of good underage players that are now sticking their head above water, and I mean, probably attracting attention from other clubs. I suppose if you look at Donal Higgins this week, has been now called into the Irish Under-19s training panel. So I mean, it's that type of thing that's what we needed to wait on and for results. So we're trying to get some things tied down now this week again.
Thanks a million for your time, Alan.
Johnny, fair play to you.
It's good that Murph knows what I'm tipping in the first division. He didn't mention actually that I've tipped Galway United quite a few times this season. It just hasn't come off. I then tipped Collins.
Never bet emotionally, John.
No, I wasn't emotionally. Like, we were 4-1 at home to Drogheda. We shouldn't be 4-1 at home to Drogheda.
But that is sort of emotional, though. I don't think you would ever admit
4-1 draw, no bet even.
I don't think you can admit that. But I think there's a part of you that's naturally drawn to Galway because of their name and their status and what they should be, rather than maybe what they are.
Maybe. I think it's been a trying season. Like Alan, I do.
Is the budget that bad?
I don't know, being honest with you. Like, Alan is better placed to talk about the budget. As I said in the piece, I'm speculating about the budget. I found some of his comparisons there very surprising. He could be right. I don't know.
I was down in Salt Hill, Devon last Friday for the squad announcement. And Kraken facility. We should let them into the league. No, we've done that. Like, a Kraken facility.
I've been very good. Obviously, mentioned by Alan there. mentioned by Alan how
they're training there now. Like, it's a great, yeah, it's a great setup. But like, it is a classic Irish thing that like you go to a club where the League of Ireland, you go to a city, sorry, where the League of Ireland team is in rag order, to be fair, right? Like, there's no positive spin on it right now. Like, you're
no, there is a positive spin. We're fine off the pitch, and we've big investment coming through, and we play in a lovely ground. So the future is fine, just the present needs time.
Okay,
rag order is harsh.
I will retract that. Rag order is a bit harsh, but when
the rag team, week maybe, but not rag order.
when the team is sort of struggling in the area, and then you go to like a club which has a great setup, you know, and has pictures of the walls on the walls of all the youth players that they have produced, you know, and like you want like the League of Ireland club to be a pillar of the community in this, to the same degree. And like, I know there's internal politics in Galway, and there's been squabbles between clubs, and you know, there'll be whataboutery from column A, B, and C when you talk this. I'm not taking sides in any way at all, because I've tried to delve into the Galway stuff before, and it's complicated. But just making the broad point that you want everyone pulling together in the area. Like, Galway has produced so many brilliant footballers, and even in Salt Hill alone, like you see Daryl Horgan, and you know, quite a few other players that have come through there.
Rory Gaffney,
yeah, and you go to Merivale, you would have Patrick Hogan come through there, and so. Like, there's a region there with great potential, and you would like everyone on the same page and not to have this sort of friction there. So hopefully the fact that Galway are training there now, as opposed to last year where they weren't training there at all, is part of some kind of reconciliation.
I think Murph as well obviously quite pointedly referred to the relationship with Salt Hill, and that's been such a problem with Galway United. They get in a lovely bar in the ground, and it was really made the experience better for fans going there, and only lasts a season because they fell out with whoever. And you're fighting a lot of battles at Galway United, but I don't know. I think our future is very bright. Whether we'll be Cork City or not on Friday night is another thing. That's one game between Premier Division and First Division. Another one is Shamrock Rovers versus Drogheda United. One of the shocks of last season. Hard to see it on Friday, Dan?
Well, let's hear what Tim Clancy says.
Realistically, it's going to be difficult, obviously, for us out in Thailand, especially after getting the surprise result last year and beating Shamrock Rovers. They certainly won't be taking us lightly this year. And taking their eye off the ball, so we know we're going to be up against it, but it's a really good game for our players to go and play in, and it's certainly one we're looking forward to, but we won't go and set up to try and defend and be negative, because we've not played like that all season, and I think we're the top scorers in the whole country because we like to attack and try and get goals. And again, listen, we'll tweak a few things, but it's more or less going to be the same Friday night.
And that was Tim Clancy, the Drogheda United manager, just building up for one of the intriguing games in the FAI Cup, sponsored by Extra.ie, on Friday. And Paul Skinner, goalkeeping coach / goalkeeper at Drogheda, get to that in a minute. But this was a game that people had written off last season, so just a little bit of a warning to Shamrock Rovers. Arguably, they took this a little bit for granted last season. The game was in Drogheda, but they can't really take it for granted on Friday, I would argue.
No, I think a lot went our way last year. Man sent off about 20 minutes.
Lee Grace, wasn't it?
Yeah. They had a penalty. Possibly might have thought that they were coming up and, you know, first division side, they were going to win. Like, a lot went, like, even the pitch was very, although it was fantastic, it was dry, a lot of stuff, and, like, every man played really, really well for us that game. A great win.
Did you watch them on Monday night?
I did. We were training, but I've seen the goals. And yeah, listen, they're a different animal this year.
It's a bit frightening, Dan. I think if you're a first division team, there was one moment in the first half where Aaron McAniff, Brandon Kavanagh, and Graham Burke were just warming up on the sideline. I was just like, you're on the bench and you're looking at them running past you, and then you're looking at what's on the pitch. Fairly intimidating.
But it's frightening for the Premier Division teams too.
Not to mind Drogheda.
I mean, like the thrashings that were handed out on Monday night by both Dundalk and Rovers, to be honest, you know. So, yeah, like, I mean, the First Division team, a team at the top end of the First Division, is probably in a similar situation to teams down towards the bottom of the Premier Division. Like, you need everything to go right, you know, and you need Rovers to be badly off it. I mean, they do have a bit of... The one thing you would say is, I was at the game against the Harps in the previous round, and, like, the cup is everything really for Rovers this year. They still want to try and win the league. They need a lot of favours. They need a lot of snookers at this stage. But the cup is their like there's fans, there's Rovers fans who want to win the cup more than they want to win the league. So the only thing is you try and turn that pressure against them, because they were 1-0 up against Finn Harps 20 minutes ago. Probably should have had the game done. And actually, in fairness to Harps, they finished pretty well. They stayed in the game and then finished well. And Rovers wobbled a small bit in the last 10-15. And with it all being settled on the night now, like it goes to extra time and stuff, it's almost like an old school cup. It's almost like the first division team becomes like a League of Ireland team in Europe or something like this, where you need to like just stay in the game, and see what happens. So that is that pressure is on Rovers, but they do have the ability to go and blow teams away. They do have that.
We'll jump in there when you said like regarding ourselves on Friday being frightened or fearful. I think that's one thing that the manager's very, very good at, I think, during the week. It doesn't matter who we're playing. He's very, very calm during the week, even before in his team talk. And I think that it sort of shows in the players, because we have a lot of young players. And I think if you had a manager who was shouting and screaming during the week and putting the fear of God into them, I think it can show in the way that he can play. I think if anyone who has seen us play, right, listen, we know who we're playing against. Like, Rovers are fantastic. They have been fantastic this season, but hopefully it'll be the same again for our boys, but the instructions will still be the same from Tim. There'll be nothing different from what we do week in, week out, although we'll be probably paying a lot more attention to themselves and probably won't have the ball as much. But regarding when we are on the ball, hopefully we'll express a fearless side to us, which the boys have done very well this season.
I remember speaking to Tim at the start of the season. I think it was up in Dundalk. It must have been the Malone Cup game. I think I was at it. And actually, he was going a bit mad that night because he said in the warm-up, the draw the players were almost looking up at the Dundalk players, almost like
Barcelona.
And I think he flipped.
He did. He doesn't usually in the dressing room afterwards and stuff. He wasn't happy with that. And he was spot on. He was spot on. Like, it's 11-11 at the end of the day. Like, right. Again, Dundalk were very good. I think it was 5-0 at half time, and
it was a trashing. Yeah, oh.
Were you in goal?
Yeah.
Cheers. I thought you'd be coming here and giving out about teams because you're not playing anymore. But just on that, what's happened? You got a hip injury earlier in the season.
Yeah, we were playing Shells, and I had a tear in my hip flexor, and I was out for. We first thought it wasn't too serious, ended up 3 months out, and when you're out for that long, Luca Gratz has come in, and he hasn't done a tap wrong, and it's just one of them where, you know, you're sort of going, usually if you're out of the side, you're getting angry at the manager for, say, dropping you, or the other keeper, I don't like him, but there's no one to be angry at, do you know what I mean? Like, Luca's a fantastic fella to work with, Tim's brilliant, it's just a bit of a sitting duck, you know, and yeah, personally, it's frustrating. But on the other side of it, like, the lads have been sensational, and it's good. It's good to see, because it's a great dressing room.
Yeah, like, we'll talk about the role you've taken on as well. But with due respect to Longford would have been expected to finish ahead of Drogheda this season, and Neil Fenn strongly linked with the Cork job, obviously, this week. We'll see what happens there, but Drogheda, 48 points from 24 games with the budget you've had. I don't know if Tim and Kevin Doherty have gotten the credit that this merits, because also he could probably have gone to Shells earlier in the off-season, or certainly looked like he might have. So what is it about this management team? And you've kind of joined that management team as well.
Well, I'd like to see myself still as a player, still young. I'm only 30. Mm. Last thing I want to sort of say, anybody thinking I'm over the hill, I'm into me coaching stuff. Now, when I sat down with Tim originally, we were speaking about goalkeeping coach. Obviously, being a goalkeeper coming in, it would have been an important role. He said he was looking, even at the start of this season, he was. But I had said to him, listen, I've got my badges, you can write that one off then, don't be worrying about having to. Because you need a certain qualification.
What qualification do you have then?
So I'm on my goalkeeping A licence at the minute this year, which is going to come into effect next season in the Premier Division.
You'll need a goalkeeping A licence.
Every club will have to have a goalkeeping A licence holder. So, and last season, I don't think there was much issues. So it was just sort of right, it worked okay. But now again, he still spoke to a couple of goalkeeping coaches. It didn't work out. And it rolled on again to this year. I've gone down and got injured, and there's, you know, Lucas, to be fair, and there's another credit to Lucas as well, that when I've got injured with my hip flexor, I can't serve. So I was basically on the sidelines, even in training. But he's just gone on with it. He hasn't moaned about it, nor have I when I was playing. That there's no goalie coaches, haven't used it as any excuses, nor that we've had to over the year and a half.
Is serve the terminology, like to throw the ball at the other keeper? Is that what it is?
I don't like throwing. I absolutely just... Lashes. I always say try break his nose.
Right.
So
I'd say he'd be throwing it. It'd be a bit more than that.
What do you do in training, well, in terms of goal? Like, what do goalkeepers actually do in your average training session?
Well, say, for instance, we'll use this weekend as an example. So,
well, you have nothing to prepare for this weekend.
No.
You'd be at nothing, like.
So when the draw came out, we were playing Wexford as well, so we'd done a bit on Wexford. So although Rovers have an abundance of quality from all over the park and he can hurt you in nearly everything, but even a show on Monday, long distance shooting is probably like a lot of players can crack a ball from a bit far out. So say, for instance, touched on a bit last week, but then going into this week is trying to get used to that scenario.
Are you ready
of shots coming in from a bit of distance, bit of bodies in between, if there's a deflection, stuff like that, you know. So it'll be a bit more than what, like, now we're on the goalkeeping A license. It's a lot more than what you think, you know. Jason Dunhill, the under-15s manager, refers to his goalie coach as a coach who specifies in goalkeeping. You know, so you got to know a bit more about what's going on, what you're going into every week, what their dangers are.
How does that work, though? So how does the goalkeeping coach know, in conjunction with maybe opposition analysts or whatever, what Wexford are expected to do next Friday? So who do you liaise with then? Are you like...
Well, you'd say, for instance, we've played against Wexford. So you know by either players or their style of play which way they'll go around. There could be teams that go long ball, there could be teams that like getting the ball in the box, could be teams that, like Rovers, they can hurt you, as I said, in a lot of ways, but a lot of players can hit from distance. So, depending on the team, you'd sort of go, right, listen, this is what we think might happen. So we try and start replicating scenarios for that weekend. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah.
But you'll only try and take it as it comes.
Yeah, there's obviously more. I mean, I remember watching Derby last year and towards the end of the playoff semi-finals or final. I mean, there was a sub coming on of a Shea Given that was giving the player a bit of a chat, you know, and it was an outfield player, you know. So they are obviously a part of the staff. They're in all the meetings. They're in all the discussions, you know. They're not just there to... As I said, just like, you know, we get to go to a lot of Ireland training sessions, say, and you always see the keepers obviously away, but it would have been Seamus McDonough before and Bialan Kelly now, and they're obviously doing their bits with the goalkeepers, but they are part of the group. They're not like in some sort of, some environment.
I think there'll always be some sort of stigma with it. So I've done my UEFA B licence, and I'm...
Is that the conventional or the goalkeeper licence now?
I've done the outfield one. Right. As well. You have to do the outfield one to go and do your goalkeeping A licence.
So then you kind of... go after your specified...
Yeah. Basically, to be a goalkeeping coach, you have to pay more money to get your way up. You have to go up two ladders. But
look, you're a postman as well.
Yeah, look, I'm loaded. But I'm hoping at some stage to go and do me UEFA A licence. I'm in coaching with a local side, helping them out coaching their outfield. I enjoy it, like, you know.
That's what you need to manage in the first division.
The A licence, so Tim and Kev will have their A licence, and I think the majority do. I think Ian Morris has it as well. And obviously with the top league in any country has to have the pro licence.
Right.
So I'd like to one day go and do the A licence as well, because it just helps you, again, going into yourself as a coach, like knowing the game a bit more. You can be able to then speak to defenders and speak knowledgeably to defenders. Over the years of being in the goalie coach, we try and say something to an outfield and the outfield's going, give a rest with you.
Interesting. Yeah.
So
what's the standard of goalkeeping coaching like, do you think, in the League of Ireland? If you look at the players, you've got, like, the big clubs obviously have put an emphasis on it. You're thinking...
Steve Williams is at Dundalk. Yeah. Jose is at... I'm doing the... Alan Manis is on the A licence and he speaks very highly with Jose. There's some excellent coaches floating around.
Eddie,
you know?
Hickey's at Cork City.
Eddie Hickey was on the licence. Yeah. The majority of it, like, basically the whole league was there. Like, Declan McIntyre up in Derry. I've worked with Decky. I've worked with loads.
What's Alan Manus like? Everyone says he's a quiet lad.
He is. He's brilliant. Yeah. He's brilliant. So he's very, very approachable. Lovely,
picking him up
ahead
of Friday night.
Yeah. So, I'm not going to make him angry anyway.
But the thing is, Dan, the a lot of these goalkeepers in the league are quite old, like from Rodgers to McNulty to Manus. All like Rodgers is 38 now, I think.
Brendan Clarke's probably in the older bracket. I mean, he's in the more experienced
early
bracket.
30s.
Yeah, experience. I don't know. Barry Murphy.
What do you make of the standard of goalkeeper in the league?
Like, I don't know. Paul's better place to judge it. Like, I mean,
good deflecting.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's. I think it's reasonable. The fact that that it's the tried and trusted. Like, I think Gary Rogers probably had a better season this year than he's had maybe
excellent
you know,
in Europe
than maybe did 3 or 4 years ago. So, like, Manus has come back and sort of got back to a certain standard. So I suppose you could be critical and say, well, where are the emerging goalkeepers coming through to push them out of the picture?
James Talbot.
Talbot obviously has emerged. I mean, he had Vigouroux last year, was very good. He was only passing through. And I suppose the flip side of it is, I mean, there isn't necessarily opportunities if the places at the top clubs are filled up. Like, there would have been, say, was it Tadhg Ryan at Cork, isn't it, who's behind McNulty? Like, Cork have had numerous number twos over the last couple of years, different characters who just, you know, couldn't get in. So, like, Paul's a better place to judge the depth of the options. I mean, the senior ones are, you know, very important players for their clubs. I mean, Rodgers was second in player of the month there, I think, behind Jack Byrne. You know, I think Manus would be held in good regard at Rovers. I don't know. I think it's probably reasonable. You know, I think it's been difficult for some of the young, like Niall Corbett was on the facilities and just on the premises, couldn't break through at a few clubs. You know, it's maybe a hard league to become an established Premier Division goalkeeper in. I don't know.
Yeah. I just flicking through the teams there, and you're saying Dundalk, Rogers, Rovers, Manus, just the experienced ones. Cherry at 30 is having a good season.
Yeah.
I think Clark, he's having nearly an underrated season. I don't think he's
an underrated keeper.
I don't think he's getting the credit. I think he's been very, very solid for two. When's he back? Is it two seasons now? He's back.
Yeah.
I think he's been very, very good this season. McNulty at Cork's been very good as well. And then you go on the young lads. Cairns.
Conor Cairns at UCD.
Ed McGinty at Sligo.
Yeah.
He's having a good
season.
He's
only a teenager, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. Finn Harps have been. Kieran Gallagher got badly injured his shoulder, and they've been chopping and changed a little bit. So out of all that, it seems like a very solid sort of.
Who's the best of them? Talbot.
I'm gonna go with Clarkey just to edge Talbot.
Fair call.
I think it's just. Again, I don't think he's getting the recognition he probably deserves for this season.
He's made a couple of unbelievable saves.
The first game of the season, I think he's had a worldie. Is it against Cork?
Yeah,
is
against
it?
Cork. That is was it? The Gordon Banks.
Yeah.
Talbot is mad as well. You can tell the way he's a goalkeeper. He runs around like a madman. But he's on top of situations, trying to get things going.
Talbot played the same age as my little brother. My brother. So I've watched him a bit when he played at home for him, and he was the same back then. And I loved it. I loved seeing the aggression of a keeper, and it hasn't changed him. He's gone away, he's come back, and he's still got that hunger and the bite. Mm. And you can see he feeds off the Jody stand like week in, week out, you know, and it's probably coming with his performances.
I don't know. Like, I mean, when you have the team of the year coming up, like PFEI votes to be soon, I'd be surprised if Manus Rogers wasn't the goalkeeper.
Yeah.
I'd expect that they might get developed.
I wouldn't give it to Manus because I don't think he's had nearly enough to do to warrant it in that.
I'm just making a prediction.
Gary Rogers has made a lot more vital saves, I think, or definitely in Europe anyway, than Manus. Talbot, to me, is probably the most talented.
I'd be surprised if Clark or Talbot got the votes in that scenario. I could be completely wrong. Maybe sometimes players just look at the top two and, you know, they start from there, but I think Talbot...
Has been probably in the media a bit more. I think it was an Irish call-up as well. You go through the season. And in the season, people were unsure how he was going to go. Don't forget who he was replaced last season as well. There was a lot of pressure on him.
What do you make of Supple?
Fantastic. I grew up. Supple was a couple of years older than me.
Still is.
Yeah. Oh, it's quick. And when I was growing up through the internationals and the 15, 16, all I could hear about was how good he was. And he's gone and he was playing championship football at the age of 18, maybe younger, you know, and he's walked away. It wasn't like he's...
It was tough. First division keepers.
me, obviously, the best.
Delaney, in fairness, another postman, but like,
Dino.
Nearly man of the match against Bowes.
But he hasn't been necessarily first choice.
Yeah.
Dino's goal of the year last year, fantastic, good friend of mine. So we've just gone on top there. McCabe's been excellent. I think he came in and had 6 clean sheets tonight.
Mm.
Luke has been fantastic when he's come in. Lee Stace had a great season. Steve McGuinness been very, very good. Gabby's solid. Jack Brady's been great. You've Paul Hunt down at Cove, Kevin Hogan at Galway, Athlone and Wexford have chopped and changed a bit. But again, it's
you're very diplomatic.
Yeah.
It's the goalkeepers union. It's not actually a physical. Not actually a physical union.
Don't be jealous, you're not in it. Like.
Yeah. He's not going to say, you know, someone there is hooked up. He's had a shocking season, actually.
No good.
Who are we playing next week? Oh, crap.
Come here. But
that's where you come in, Johnny. You should be telling him who's had a bad season.
Then he come for me then.
Yeah.
Haven't seen enough to first division anyway. But did you play outfield or were you always a goalkeeper?
Till about 11. Now, funny enough, I went to when I moved to Celtic as a schoolboy.
Just got that in there.
I just had didn't to drop even that know in it. There. Just
when I moved to he did this like 90 degree turn.
Anyone Celtic that knows me is going to absolutely kill me. But
not many Irish lads went over to Celtic when you think about that.
400 of
there's absolutely loads of them, Johnny. 400. Johnny, there's absolutely
maybe 500.
There was. Yeah. We put out. I remember I was playing a match and there was 11 Irish players starting again.
So who was there when you were at Celtic from the Irish contingent? I'm trying to think.
2 years older was, and currently still 2 years older, was Darren O'Dea, Dermot O'Carroll, Gary Walsh, Gareth Christie, and then there was myself, Graham Carey, Killian Sheridan, Paul Catalan, Timmy Coyley. Then on the knee, it was Eric Foley, Simon Dunn, Mark Nolan. Then Richie Tell comes over then. Steve McDonald, the Warren Point manager.
Yeah.
You know, so
the dog that, isn't he? Yeah.
Yeah, then you had Aidan McGeady, was Jim O'Brien, the Scottish.
Paddy McCourt there around the time?
No, he from what I remember, he came the summer I left.
Summer you left.
Sorry, to go back to the. I spent 3 years over there. For 2 years, I didn't have a goalkeeping coach and I trained outfield.
That's.
As a goalkeeper?
Mad.
That's absolutely mad.
Bonkers. Absolutely.
What,
bonkers.
What year are we talking? Like, you were.
Yeah, 2005, 2006. 2006, 2007.
Like 16 to 18?
16, 17, yeah.
So what did you do every day?
Train outfield. Ruined Troilus when they come over. Nutmeg Troilus for fun. That was, yeah, I was.
You did the goalie, like, I mean, you're not.
I trained outfield. We'd have two or three goalies.
You're not doing much for their confidence when you're no, nutmegging the Troilus and you're a keeper.
Gone, good luck. Yeah.
Just call to him after Pat and head, by the way, I'm the keeper, mate.
Yeah. yeah, that was highly frustrating.
Who was manager? Like, I can't get my head around.
First team manager?
Yeah.
Gordon Strachan had come in. So it signed a deal when Martin O'Neill was manager and he had his goalie coach, whose name?
Seamus McDonough.
No, it wasn't Seamus. I can't remember his name. But when I was on trial, I trained with him. Trained with the first team. This is brilliant. Like, freaking, yeah, where do we sign? Like, The week I go over, I meet the goalie coach walking out and he's just literally going, listen lads, I'm away. And I was like, oh no. And I just, you're like, surely a goalie coach is going to come in. And there was times where I'd be training on the Astro with the youths or, and the reserves or whatever, and the goalie coach and the fourth team goalies would be on the other side of the fence, like, and I'd be chatting to the fourth team goalies or reserve goalie, wherever it was. And they'd be like, why aren't you coming over? I was like, I'm not allowed.
And what was Martin O'Neill like?
I only met him when I signed. Mm. Basically, he wouldn't have taken when I was training or on trial. Mm. There, he wouldn't have really.
He wasn't a day to day coach either. He doesn't do much of that. Right?
From what I'm hearing, again, I wasn't there during this time, but he was. I just remember from going in and signing the contract, he came in and he was brilliant. Like, you know, brilliant with the family and all that who come over. Like, so. Mm.
That was some collection of characters. I mean, Killian Sheridan's travelled the world now with football.
He's a bit of a hit on Twitter from some stuff. Arguably the best hat trick ever.
He had a very good tweet about Norwich there recently.
I don't know if he was
and look out for the results every week.
And I hope they get hammered. Because he was on trial there. Norwich was my first trial. I look out for the results every week. I hope they get hammered. They didn't sign me.
Yeah, he seems a bit of a champ now, in fairness. Where's he playing in Israel?
He's
I think he's in Israel.
Is he?
He's been around around the houses. I actually went over to interview him when he was at Motherwell, when he went from South to Motherwell, and he was actually very quiet. And
is he a cabin lad? Is he?
He's very quiet, yeah, but he's a cabin lad. Yeah. Really quiet and withdrawn. And then like all of a sudden he arrives on Twitter with just like sort of he's jokes galore. Like he's done a podcast, which actually is a bit sort of
he has his own
quirky.
Mr. Sherry, isn't it?
Yeah. He's a bit sort of quirky. Yeah. He's been all around the place.
He befriended Rio Ferdinand over the years, hasn't he? He's been on. Yeah, so he's got a good.
He'll
circle.
Do well in later years. Graham Carey's gone travelling now as well.
Graham Carey is in. Is he in Bulgaria?
He's gone to Bulgaria.
CSKA Sofia, maybe.
Yeah. He just went to after being at Plymouth, and he's done quite well for himself as well.
He's playing for Irona Kiryat Shmona FC, which it's nice to see.
They're Israel. Yeah,
it's nice to see Israel allowing some non-nationals into the country. Anyway, but so you're up against Rovers at the weekend.
We
have to move on.
Okay.
From one green and white story to another. You were at Celtic, were you?
Oh, I got more than that.
Realistically, I don't know. What chance do you have? And I'm not trying to big Rovers up, but...
Well, you did that every other week, John, to be fair.
It's a game of football.
Their Rovers are 5-2 to win the Cup at the moment, which I think, as Dan says, all their eggs are kind of in that basket, if not all, for 99% of them.
Except
agreed. Looking at the table,
5-2. And Dundalk or Derry will be knocked out of this round.
Yep.
Dundalk, if Dundalk the best team in the country, Derry are possibly the third or fourth best, if any. So it's going to be a little bit easier for the Premier Division teams because one of the big teams will be gone. And like as a Galway United fan, you're just looking to get rid of the big teams to give you some sort of chance because I think Galway could be Cork if we were up for it. You know, and Cork nearly were not.
Shamrock over Strada, John. Shamrock over Strada.
What was they on about there?
Look,
I do think Rovers are worth a bet each way to win the Cup at 5-2. I'll just put that in because I think that they will go well in the competition and hopefully avoid Dundalk. If they beat Drogs, will they beat Drogs though?
I'll tell you on Saturday morning.
Yeah.
Johnny, if you were with the Drogheda lads, you'd be like them up at Dundalk, you'd be looking up at the other team. If you were in the Drogheda...
Not with Big Tim.
He wouldn't
Tim
have
and
it.
Kevin.
But you'd be a prime candidate. You'd be looking at the Rovers lads going, ah... Oh. There they are.
They can concede goals.
I think
can't have that attitude. I mean, we didn't really get to finish. We didn't really get to finish that story about Dundalk. Like Tim went through them because his mentality would have been even if they are better, you can't go out there thinking that. Ultimately, that would have been his point, right?
You're spot on. He was spot on. Lucky enough, I wasn't with the boys. I was doing my own stuff.
The goalkeepers, as you know, were off over in the corner.
It's a daunting task.
It is daunting. Especially in Tala as well. As I said, we had a lot going for us last year. But I'm sure it'd be I'm sure in both dressing rooms we'd be reminded of last year, us to sort of say, listen, it is doable. Of course then I'm sure we'd be probably reminded in the Rovers dressing room, listen, make sure it doesn't happen again.
Even if you do get knocked out, the fact that, you're effectively guaranteed a playoff spot of some description. It's been an excellent season for Drogheda, and I guess you'll be itching to possibly play as well in the few games that are left. Who knows what might happen? We've seen in Liverpool they bring in a keeper and straight away he's playing. Because you're going to have a few big games left.
Of course, yeah. Now listen, it's been about 4 or 5 months. I think Luka has deserved a lot of credit. Even if he does have a bit of a hiccup, I don't think he should be under massive pressure to come out. I think that's only fair. The other side of me saying, get him out now to play.
There's always a story in the playoffs, though, isn't it? Look at the playoffs the last couple of years. It's always an unlikely story. No matter
the nine men that shells that nearly put us out on pens.
Yeah.
Yeah, listen, we still have hope. that result on Saturday... For the first time maybe Friday, for the first time maybe this season, after we'd won the game, it was like, just maybe, Shells slip up and we still have to play Shells. There might be a chance. And then Shells go and produce their best performance of the season.
Huge win in Longford.
Yeah, it was. But still, Shells still have to play Bray. They still have to play us. And they've still got to play Limerick. Now,
you're still fighting for this title.
Of course. Yeah. Like, we'll take every game. And we'll try and win every game, if that spills into the playoffs, it'll be the exact same.
And before we finish up, where do you see yourself down the line involved in football, obviously, anyway?
Hopefully, yeah. Hopefully, obviously, I've done the goalkeeping coaching badges. I'm at the highest now. I don't think, after, hopefully, I get this cert, I can't go any higher. I will, again, I'll look to do the UEFA A. And I don't know. I'll have to say. Listen, as long as I'm involved in football, I'll be happy, you know, because I do love it, you know.
Thanks a million to Paul Skinner for coming in. We haven't spoken about goalkeeping. Like, nearly 3 years. It was on Off the Ball last night. Joe Malloy couldn't believe LOI Weekly is nearly 3 years old. I thought it feels a lot older to me.
Did you discuss it on the show?
Like, we did. Yeah. Joe brought it up.
Oh, did he?
He brought up... I can't remember what the context of the... It was about Jack Byrne. I can't remember what the context of the podcast was, but... yeah, it was. Anyway, we're here nearly 3 years now, but I don't think we've spoken about... We haven't had many goalkeepers. Certainly haven't had goalkeeping coach on.
I've had Supple on plenty of times.
He's not a goalkeeping coach.
No, I know. I'm just saying we've had goalkeepers. Yeah. We've had Brendan Clark. We've had actually reasonable amounts of goalkeepers.
Gary Rogers.
Yeah.
But anyway... it's going to be difficult for whoever's in goal for Drogheda on Friday.
You would have thought so. You'd fancy Rovers to get the job done there. Derry Dundalk, obviously, is the highlight on Friday. We were hoping to get Decky Devine. But
Doggy couldn't come on the show. Doesn't have the Skype on Dara now.
Your Derry impressions, and like you did...
Deers O as well. But better after a few points. But the Deers O Decky, Paddy McCaw team, they've had a great season. You just imagine, though... I don't want Dundalk and Cork City in another cup final. I don't think it'll happen this season. I don't want it. I'd actually prefer, realistically, if we two completely new teams, preferably Galway United. If not, Derry and Rovers would be a good fit.
Yeah, it's a challenging one for Derry.
This is going to be a cracking
game. It's going to be fantastic. Settle on the night as well. And obviously, they're going to meet.
You're a fan of that. I'm not.
They're going to meet. I am a fan of it. I mean, yeah. We can't complain about fixture. Owen,
yes or no to replays? The producer, the boy Owen?
He says no. Well, Johnny, we can't complain. We cannot complain about fixture schedules and then go. But no, do you know what I'd love? A good old cup replay.
It's nothing to do with the cup replay. It's just a stupid season.
You only want the cup replay because Bowes and Shells was brilliant. You don't want a cup replay.
I don't want games decided on the night. The FEI Cup should be given far more credence than it is, such that replay should be a thing. This competition should be really, really promoted. Like, really,
I think decided on the night is terrific. I think it's a
wrong.
I think it's a great initiative. You're completely wrong.
I'd like people to... We might put up a poll on this. Do you want cup replays or not? Interesting, Dan. You may well win this one on the poll, but democracy is often wrong as well.
That's it.
People are often wrong. Donald Trump was voted in.
That's
Brexit.
Like, democracy won. It's true. Yeah. But you also
when
see,
will people learn democracy doesn't work?
But like, you also see lads from the, like, democracy also works in the cases of the lads from like the Monster Raven Looney Party, like, you know, who get around 14 votes. Like, I mean, some of your proposals should be delivered by a man with a novelty rosette standing on that's the more sinister version. But I just think that
what's your favourite cup replay?
Well, Dundalk and Galway had an epic one, didn't they, back in the day, which was
called off.
Actually, was that even a replay? That
It was a replay. It was called off. The replay was called off.
Yeah.
And then it went to...
It was 4-3.
Yeah.
It was an epic game.
It's... What kind of annoys me is that the FAI Cup has almost followed the FA Cup in terms of not being as important until it gets to the latter stages where everyone is like, oh, you can get to the Aviva Stadium here.
I think this year is slightly different.
And Europe.
I think this year is slightly different. I think this year the FA Cup is like, for a lot of the clubs left in the competition...
It's a big deal.
It's the biggest deal. Like, now the Finn Harps are gone, say, like, they're obviously concentrating on staying up.
Like, I was talking to Tim, actually. Tim Clancy's like, there's no way. This is a huge competition. We're not resting players for this. And I really like that. Like, I don't see the point in resting players for the FAI Cup unless you really need to.
But to finish the point, like, I think for some of the first division clubs challenging them for promotion, yeah, it's probably not the be all and end all as much as Tim has said that. But I think for, like, look at the Premier Division now, like, Dundalk want to win a treble. So for them, like, obviously they want to get the league job done. They should be capable of doing it. So for them, the cup is massive. Like, Dundalk went with a stronger team in the EA Sports Cup semi-final than they did arguably in the league game against Finn Harps. So that shows where their mindset is in terms of trophies. Rovers, as I've said, it's everything for them. Bowes, you know, goes without saying after last year, and we saw the scenes in the Shells match. Derry, similar. Pats, possibly their best chance of getting to Europe, you know, as much as they've got a job to do. Cork, it's a chance to get things going again.
I have to disagree with you there.
You know, Sligo.
It's not Pat's best chance.
No, okay, well, maybe not, but it's a way that they can, you know, they can take control of their destiny with this. You know, if they finish fourth, they're depending on who wins the cup.
This is the thing, get favourable draws. Like Derry or Dundalk are going to be out. You could fluke your way into a semi-final.
So basically, I think for all the clubs, really, that are remaining, that are Premier Division clubs, okay, Waterford maybe have to just keep their eye on staying up here. So there may be one team that might...
What did you make of them on Monday night?
I didn't see that. I was sort of between games on Monday. Mm. I didn't see enough to be able to make a judgment. So I think the cup is big this year. I think sometimes the cup here struggles. Like attendance has dropped because it's not included as part of season tickets.
Definitely, yeah.
So like attendance has fallen. But I just have a good feeling about the cup this year that as much as one of Derry or Dundalk go out, that I think if a lot of the other ties go to form...
A lot of big teams.
I nearly hope that they do. Then we could have a cracking series, a quarter final.
That's very harsh in the likes of Glengad, Waterford, one of the longest trips they'll ever make. Do you not want a bit of romance? You know, Glengad knocking out Waterford.
I think probably the biggest problem with the cup with the format now is that for the amateur clubs, the junior clubs,
out of season,
intermediate, they're in pre-season, so there is no romance at all.
Crumlin, Lucan United.
Yeah, like Crumlin. I mean, Dave Mooney signed for Lucan. Crumlin should be able to get that done, and Crumlin will be a good opponent for someone in the quarterfinals if they do that. But the problem where the cup probably has lost a bit is that you don't get those romantic stories. Now, even this year, like in the first round, any non-league club as such that played a league club lost, you know, so even against first division teams, and obviously there will be a debate over where the highest level of that stands with the first division, so like that's not great. There's no stories building up there, and I can't imagine Glengad Waterford will deliver. But anyway, Derry Dundalk is the big game. Parkhouse suspended for Derry, which is a massive blow for them. Dundalk, I'll go back to our discussion earlier on. It's very possible that 6 weeks in Europe has just sharpened Dundalk up. Now, again, two games is not enough to draw a conclusion from. There was a sending off in the Finn Harps game.
McElhinney hit
but they've scored 11 goals in two games coming out of Europe. Like, okay, again, Bowes made changes from Monday too, so I'm not getting too carried away. But it is possible that those European, like the Dundalk were maybe a bit stodgy before that. It's possible that the European games has tuned them up again, and if that's the case, they might go to Derry and get the job. And this will test that theory, because this is a proper game against like a proper team. If they can negotiate that unscathed, then you are coming around to a situation of, well, actually, who does stop them? It's a Dundalk Rovers pathway here, you know, and it's all about the draw that determines where we go.
The Galway United board decided that 150 programmes would be good enough for the Cork City game. So if you're going to that game, the programmes are 100% going to sell out, because we're surely going to get more. It's roughly one quarter of the attendance by the programme. Probably it's a bit of a dying breed, but we're working away, but I would hope there'd be a lot more for the game. Dan, haven't had a big game in Galway in basically since the Shells game starts the season, so you know, you never know.
You hope so.
You never know. Bowes against Longford is going to be very interesting. Obviously, speculation about Neil Finn's future as well, which will be one of the talking points of that game. What do you make of the Neil Finn story? Like he's kind of, I think Cork, if he does go to Cork want a manager who'll play football. And even talking to Paul Skinner beforehand, he was like, Neil Finn insisted when they were there they played football. But it's going to be an interesting choice for Cork, whoever they appoint as their next manager.
Yeah, because whatever they do, like we had Declan Carry on a while back, a load of our players are out of contract. Mm. So whatever happens, the new manager, now that's possibly a good thing to a degree. You're not inheriting a load of players that you mightn't want.
Yeah.
So if you're appointed early enough, and there seems to be a suggestion they want to make a move on it early, then like you've got a chance to like fashion a team. And as I said earlier on, we're talking about like how do you bridge the gap. Cork are probably the one team, because if they get their appointment right and there's a buzz, like they can have 6,000 people in the ground the first game of next season. That generates all revenue and momentum and stuff. So they have an opportunity still, if they recruit wisely, to get something going in a way that maybe others would struggle to. So Fenn has managed Longford in the first division. Like they may not be promoted this year either.
Third at the moment.
You know, I think to be fair, finishing behind Shells, it's very hard for them to compete with Shells. UCD last year, you know, if Drogheda were ahead of them this year, like they're teams that probably have less resources. So there's a few questions to answer. But he's got a reputation with the club. He's got a relationship with the club. You know, he knows what it takes to have success in Cork, I do have the opinion, and it's a bit harsh on John Cotter, but like he's come in and he's done okay, but I think the Cork need to generate a buzz ahead of the start of next season. I don't think they're going to do that with a retention of what's there now. I think there needs to be a look of freshness and a new start about what they do going into next year. I just think that's unfortunately where they're at. So where else do they go? I mean, who else can generate that buzz? I can see why Fenn would do that because of his reputation. Otherwise, you're talking about going outside the league and maybe going for that type of appointment that can build something up as well. Like, I don't know, but
it's a big appointment for them. Whoever comes in,
it's a massive appointment. Mm. Yeah, it's a big story the winter to come.
Just to wrap up the fixtures, Shamrock Rovers, Drogheda, UCD, St. Patrick's, Galway United, Cork, Derry City, Dundalk, Bohemians, Longford, Sligo, Limerick, Glengad, Waterford, Crumlin, Lucan. Are you hoping to get in a game or are you too sick?
No, I'm going to Derry.
Going to Derry?
Yeah, I'm going to Derry.
Got all that Derry. Or a one is a one.
But on Sunday, August 25th, Cavantilly FC will host a testimonial for legendary League of Ireland and former Ireland international kit manager Michael Locker-Davis in Stradbrook. I assume a lot of you haven't been to a game in Stradbrook, but it's actually it's a lovely experience. It's a nice little ground with a bar, and that is definitely a fundraiser, Dan, that people could
really
support.
Popular League of Ireland figure. There's three games across the day. There's a load of League of Ireland legends. There's a League of Ireland select with a slightly more contemporary collection of players.
Some old names as well, like Mick Doohan. I was remembering
Mick Doohan, Richie Parsons, Tarzan O'Brien, a lot of the old Bray names. Then
Eddie Gormley,
and then on the other side there was like
Pat Jennings Jr. presumably.
Then there was like there was Alan O'Neill, Terry Eviston, John Gill. So a collection of generations as well. So I mean, I assume rolling subs would be the order of the day, but it looks at the length of some of the squads. Some of the squads were bigger than Cork squad 2 years ago, so it's going to be a challenge to maybe get them all a certain amount of minutes. But listen, it's a proper community effort in terms of how the League of Ireland community.
Have you been to Stradbrook?
Around. I have, but yeah. I've only been there for a press event. I actually haven't been there for a game. Should also mention as well, on that, a really sad passing of Tony Eizi over the weekend.
Yeah,
as well.
I couldn't believe that. 48 years of age.
48. He took ill in Italy.
Scored a big goal for Shells in Europe.
Last month.
Remember him? I remember him very well playing for Cove. Like many strikers, scored a lot against Galway United, but he was a good player. And
played a season for Dundalk, half season for Dundalk as well. And he added a bit of
glamour.
There's an Italian player.
Yeah. The thing was with Tony Eizi, he was on the books of Lazio, but I think he was there when he was under 14.
It didn't matter.
And you're really sad. A player that's. It was just hard to believe that somebody that young could be gone.
Yeah.
So commiserations to Tony Itzi's family on a very sad passing. And obviously, if you are around on Sunday, it'd be great to get to Stradbrook for that.
Yeah, it's a really worthy cause. And I think it will, I would hope it will be supported. Hopefully the weather's kind.
Do you disagree with my Shamrock Rovers tip for the cup before we end up?
I think Rovers each way is not exactly the boldest selection of all time.
Like, 5-2.
I think Messi might score a few goals for Barcelona this year as well.
5-2, and it's 5-4 to get to the final.
Yeah, like it's a reasonable. I wouldn't be taking on that though myself.
Who are the better team at the moment? Well, if they were playing each other in the final tomorrow.
If they drew Dundalk in the semi-finals, or
you don't want
finals,
that.
What price would they be?
I think it'd be 50-50 at the moment.
I know, but I'm just like,
yeah.
I just.
They're 5-2.
I just take them to win the cup, and I'd forget the each way element. But anyway, look.
Now
everyone's into punting. So like, you just take them to win the cup. But it's an obvious shout. Like, I mean, they've got some brilliant like players who can win a game. Like that. But I'm just interested to see what's in Dock now. Is this illusion these last two games, or are they back to? Maybe the peak level that we think that they should be hitting.
My understanding,
because they are still like top of the league and likely league winners. And they've lost twice this year.
Yeah.
So I'm just interested to see, like, have Dundalk got back to a peak level from their European experience, because I can totally see across the season, and if McElhenney is back purring, and Hooban took his goals very well, almost looks to be a bit. Probably pumped up by some of the. I think they're possibly maybe a bit stung by some of the post-European reaction, and it might just
what reaction.
Just some of the negative comments about where did they underperform, etc. I think that I don't know. I watched after they scored six against Bowes, and the celebrations were I think they've got a point to prove in a, in a weird way now, and you know, for a club that's top of the league and probably comfortable in terms of winning the league, you know, to have some kind of fire for this, for the cups, it's interesting. But like, they could be knocked out of it on Friday, like, you know, and it's not inconceivable that we could be talking next week about Dundalk being out of the cup. But I think if they can get through that with it, and show some of the form that they've shown in the last couple of games, then I'd still make them favourites to win the cup, clearly.
Yeah, that's an interesting call. Thanks very much to Paul Skinner for coming in, to Alan Murphy for taking the Skype call, to Tim Clancy for the WhatsApp audio, and thanks very much for listening. But there are limits to your life.